This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Mildred Bailey was one of the great jazz singers of the 30s and 40s. Although she was very popular in her time, she hasn't gotten her due in subsequent years. A new 10-CD box set may help to change that. It features her Columbia recordings from 1929 to 42 and has been released by Mosaic Records. My guest, Will Friedwald, wrote the extensive liner notes for the set. He's also the author of Jazz Singing and Sinatra, The Song Is You. Friedwald calls Bailey one of the essential missing links of American music. As Gary Giddens describes in his new book about Bing Crosby, it was Mildred Bailey who introduced Crosby to the recordings of Louis Armstrong. Bailey and Crosby are considered the first white singers to pick up on Armstrong's rhythmic innovations. As you'll hear, Mildred Bailey had a great sense of rhythm, whether she was singing a swing song or a ballad. Let's start with her 1935 recording of When Day Is Done.
When day is done and shadows fall, I dream of you. When day is done, I think of all the joys we knew. That yearning, returning, to hold you in my arms. Won't go, love, I know, love, without you night has lost its charms. When day is done, grass is wet with twilight's dew. My lonely heart is sinking with the sun. I miss your tender kiss the whole day through. I miss you most of all when day is done.
Will Friedwald, welcome back to Fresh Air. Now, what do you personally love about Mildred Bailey singing?
Well, the fact that she's, you know, like I say, she was one of the first to listen to Louis Armstrong, and that whole concept of spontaneity, of intimacy, which is, you know, a trademark we associate with Crosby. And of course, this is the, you know, the defining characteristic of American, you know, vernacular music and American singing. The whole concept of intimacy, of having this kind of direct relationship with the audience that you know, really comes out. You know, it's sort of based on electronic reproduction. I mean, it's the kind of thing that wasn't possible before the invention of the microphone. But at the same time, you know, even though it's electronic, even though it, you know, relies on transistors and things like that, it's incredibly personal. I mean, it establishes this direct relationship between singer and audience, and Bailey is just about the first to do that. And besides which, you know, she's got this amazingly appealing personality. I mean, she's one of the first popular singers, or, you know, vocal artist, to, you know, to have what we consider now a personality, to have a distinct sort of charm and charisma that's carried from record to record. And you can really, you know, there's a Mildred Bailey kind of a song, and by extension, there's a Mildred Bailey kind of a sound. She works with all kinds of different musicians, from, you know, say, Duke Ellington musicians to Benny Goodman musicians. And, you know, the sound of her records is amazingly consistent. I mean, there really is a whole Mildred Bailey musical universe.
What would you describe as the qualities of her singing?
Well, she has a... It's not a particularly high voice, but it sort of sounds deceptively high when you first hear it. But it is a very, it's not a big screaming voice, or you know, I mean, if you think that, say, the major singer in the blues and jazz sphere before Bailey, say that was Bessie Smith, I mean, that was a very big sound. And compared to, you know, Bessie Smith, Mildred has a very, very small sound. It's a very personal kind of a thing, and it's a very... it has a kind of a unique sort of very humorous quality to it, a little girl kind of a quality to it. It's just very endearing. It's just, you know, once you've heard Bailey, it's hard not to fall in love with her. It's hard not to, you know, go along with her. And she's always eminently believable.
Bill Miller, who is a pianist who worked with her and with Sinatra, said that she never sang a song the same way twice. And she talks about that a little bit in a 1938 Downbeat interview that you quote in the liner notes. Would you paraphrase that for us?
Well, she, Bailey said that when she was a little kid, it was hard for her to afford to go and buy sheet music, even though she could play the piano. And, you know, if she had the chance, she could really say, you know, if she wanted, she could learn a song exactly the way it was written and perform it like that consistently. But she always said that, you know, she didn't have any money and she couldn't afford to buy sheet music. So she just had to hear a song and remember it. And of course, you know, when she was remembering it, there was an interpretive process going on, because she wouldn't remember it exactly the way it was written, but she would change a note here and there. You know, she would change a rhythm, make one note higher, another lower. In fact, you know, she would personalize it. She would make it into something her own. And as she put it in that interview, later on, that process became known as swinging. That's the way she put it. And people liked it. People liked to hear what she would do with a song rather than just hear it strictly, you know, the way it was written. Of course, this is the basis of jazz singing. The whole concept of jazz singing is to personalize it and make it into, you know, to interpret it in such a way that, you know, Mildred Bailey doing Lover Come Back to Me is not the same piece of music as Frank Sinatra or Tony Bennett or of course, you know, Nelson Eddy doing Lover Come Back to Me. They're all, you know, that's the great thing about the American popular song is that it's possible to be flexible with it so that each interpreter who does it makes it into, you know, the equivalent of a whole new piece of music. And Mildred Bailey is a very, very early example of that taking place. And you know, in fact, you know, she did it so early and so like naturally that there really wasn't even a name for it at that point.
Why don't we hear Mildred Bailey singing Lover Come Back to Me? This was recorded in 1938 with Mildred Bailey and her orchestra, Teddy Wilson at the piano. Anything you want to say about this before we hear it, Will?
Oh, it's just an extraordinary, considering that the song was only about 10 years old then, and it came out of operetta. You know, it's from The New Moon by Sigmund Romberg, and it's meant to be, you know, sung by, you know, what we would think of as a very kind of stiff baritone in a very overtly classical, overtly theatrical way. And then to hear, you know, Mildred Bailey come along, and, you know, this was really, you know, quite radically turning the song on its ear in those days. For her to come along and swing it and swing the hell out of it, it was just, you know, quite radical at that point. And yet, you know, it doesn't sound radical today. It just sounds perfectly natural. It just sounds like, you know, such an obvious and wonderful and, you know, inspired thing to do with the song.
Let's hear it. That's Mildred Bailey, recorded in 1938, one of the many recordings of hers featured on the new 10-CD box set, the complete Columbia recordings of Mildred Bailey. My guest, Will Friedwald, wrote the liner notes. Will, tell us something about Mildred Bailey's childhood, where she grew up, what her family was like.
Mildred Bailey was very closely associated with Bing Crosby from the early days. They both were born in 1903, of course. You know, for many years, she always put down her birth as being considerably later, but now we know, thanks to Gary Giddens, that it was indeed 1903. And they both grew up in, you know, northern Washington, and Mildred Bailey was believed to be, she's known to have been part Indian. And the interesting thing is that she was attracted to music at a very early age, and after her mother died, she had one of these horrible stepmothers that you read about in like Grimm's fairy tales. And the important thing about that is, you know, making, you know, sweet are the uses of adversity. Her situation at home was so awful that it was actually amounted to a good thing, because she left home very young and, you know, became a professional musician very, very, very young, you know, like still in her teens. And she was, you know, singing professionally up and down the West Coast, you know, while still a teenager. And she managed to sort of set up a kind of camp in Los Angeles where her younger brother, who was Bing Crosby's singing partner, where the two of them could sort of, you know, embark to when they were ready to start a professional music career.
My guest is Will Friedwald. He wrote the liner notes for the new 10 CD box set, The Complete Columbia Recordings of Mildred Bailey. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Will Friedwald wrote the liner notes for the new 10 CD collection, The Complete Columbia Recordings of Mildred Bailey. Bailey's brother, Al Rinker, was Bing Crosby's singing partner in the 20s. Bailey helped get them started when they visited her in Los Angeles, where she was singing in a speakeasy. I asked Will Friedwald how she helped them.
Well, she helped them both in terms of getting work and in terms of the content of their music. She was the one who knew what all the best songs were. She knew who the best musicians were. She knew what they should be listening to. She knew what records they should be studying. And also in terms of getting work, she knew where the jobs were. She knew what, you know, where they could finally get, you know, work as singers. And Crosby always gave her credit for that, always said that she was really, as he wrote in the early 60s, she was the one who gave him his start.
Now, one of the early recordings on this new Mildred Bailey box set just really astonished me because I'd never heard her sound that way. This is a recording called I'd Like to Do Things for You, made in 1930, and she sounds very Betty Boop on it. And although Mildred Bailey has a kind of high, girlish-sounding voice, she's a very sophisticated singer. And this is so cute and so Betty Boop. What's the story behind this recording?
It's kind of fascinating in that she, Mildred Bailey, became a regular member of the Paul Whiteman Orchestra in 1929. And because, you know, I believe that Whiteman was feuding with his record company, Columbia Records, at that point, he really wasn't in the studio that much, and Mildred did not get to make a record with that band until 31. But in the interim, she does this record of the song, I Like to Do Things for You, with Frank Trumbauer's orchestra, which is a spinoff of the Whiteman band. And like I said, like you say, the Betty Boop kind of a voice, which was, you know, introduced by Helen Kane, was very popular then. And the woman who sings the song in the movie The King of Jazz is a woman named Jeannie Lang, who's a very, very strict boop-boop-a-dooper. And, you know, for years it was thought that it was Jeannie Lang on this recording, because it does sound like her, but you know, this is her just about her first record, and it just happens to, you know, it's just Mildred Bailey was obviously asked to do a boop-boop-a-doop kind of a voice, and she does it very well. You know, this singing is way more annoying than, you know, her regular singing, but, you know, there you have it, you know. She sings in a similar voice about 10 years later on The Three Little Fishies, which is also this kind of, you know, children's song, so it's also appropriate for that kind of a voice.
Well, let's hear Mildred Bailey recorded in 1930, and this is what, her second recording?
Her second recording.
I'd like to finish your tie. Smooth your hair, put things in order here and there, 'cause I'd like to do things for you. I'd like to pick the lint off your suit. I want to keep you nice and cute, 'cause I'd like to do things for you. There doesn't seem to be need for me.
Many of Mildred Bailey's recordings are with the vibraphonist and xylophone player, Red Norvo, who was also, for some years, Mildred Bailey's husband. How did they meet?
They met in the Whiteman band. Norvo had, you know, been playing around the Midwest, and finally he wound up in Chicago. And that was where Whiteman heard him and hired him and made him, you know, another attraction within the band. And the two fell in love and got married. And by the time they left the band, they were a team. And they stayed a team even, you know, for some time after their marriage fell apart. But they were married for about 10 years. And, you know, they led this band together. And it became, you know, one of the great, today, you know, unfortunately, little known. But it was really considered one of the great bands of the swing era by fans and critics and musicians at the time. And it was very, very, very highly regarded.
And what do you think they brought out in each other musically?
It's interesting because people think of the swing era, you know, even then there was this tendency to think of, you know, swing bands as loud and noisy. And what the Bailey Norvo band was all about, they referred to it as soft, subtle swing, which is a fairly apropos term. And it was a very musicianly band. It was about, you know, you could swing and not necessarily have to scream in people's ears. You know, there were ways of swinging that were, you know, much more subtle. And the two of them both had this in common with each other. I mean, just the fact that Norval was a virtuoso soloist on the xylophone, which is not, you know, I mean, he had as much rhythm as Harry James, but he didn't have to make, you know, a whole lot of noise. And of course, Bailey, you know, swung like crazy. And at the same time, you know, she never screamed. You know, she had this very soft, you know, soft, subtle swinging voice. And the two of them complemented each other beautifully. It was a really, and the whole band was structured around that. Virtually every number has a very prominent xylophone solo. And, you know, the two of them just really brought out the best in each other. And they were really one of the all-time great, you know, combinations of musician and singer.
Is there a recording that you think really illustrates that musical relationship between Mildred Bailey and Red Norvo?
That musical relationship is really... it's the point of the whole box. I mean, they fortunately they recorded very prolifically, and most of the 10 CDs in this box are from, you know, kind of the 2 year concentrated period of the band from 1937 to 1939. I think I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm is a really perfect example of Bailey and Norvo together at their best. I mean, her singing is so effervescent, and so is, you know, Norvo's solo, and the two of them, you can just see that they're on, you know, the same plane, the same page, as it were, spiritually and musically and rhythmically or whatever.
So here they are, Mildred Bailey and Red Norvo, recorded in 1937.
To keep me warm, I can't remember a worse December. Just watch those icicles form. What do I care if icicles form? I've got my love to keep me warm. Off with my overcoat, off with my glove. I need no overcoat, I'm burning with love. My heart's on fire, the flame grows higher, so I will weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm.
That's Mildred Bailey with Red Norvo, recorded in 1937, as featured on the new box set, The Complete Columbia Recordings of Mildred Bailey. My guest, Will Friedwald, wrote the liner notes. He's also the author of a book about Sinatra called Sinatra, The Song Is You. I'm interested in hearing about Mildred Bailey's relationship with some of the other great singers of her time, particularly Billie Holiday. She really liked Billie Holiday's singing. In fact, you say she helped launch Billie Holiday's career.
It's an interesting thing in that John Hammond, who was, of course, you know, rightfully credited with discovering Holiday, always told the story about hearing her for the first time in Harlem in 1933. And what he left out, or what, you know, seems to be the case that he left out, and is that Mildred Bailey and Red Norvo were with him at that point. And I've heard Red told me that story several times, that the three of them were up in Harlem, and they happened to hear this girl singing, and it was Mildred who actually said, "Wow, that girl really has something. You know, you should, you know, keep your eye on that one." And, you know, it's kind of a mystery why Hammond never mentioned that. But like I say, Norvo never took credit for it himself. He always said that it was Mildred. And For a while, Mildred even tried to help out the Holiday family when they were first getting started, in that Sadie Fagan, Billie Holiday's mother, worked as a maid, and the Norvos actually hired her for a while, and until apparently she was a complete screw-up as a maid, and it was Red who had to fire her, even though, you know, Mildred was opposed to it because she wanted to help out the Holidays or the Fagans. And Billy sort of got the idea that it was like a professional jealousy kind of a thing, and was, you know, very resentful of Mildred Bailey for a long time after that. But really, it was Mildred who, you know, pulled John Hammond's coattails to her to begin with, and, you know, really deserves a lot of credit for, you know, launching the career of Billie Holiday, as it were. And interestingly enough, 6 years later, the two of them heard Frank Sinatra before he was ever discovered. And at that point, they tried to hire him for, you know, the Bailey Norvo band. And it turned out he was already set to go with Harry James at that point. So, but Norvo always, you know, insisted that, you know, hearing Sinatra before he was discovered was the same kind of thrill as hearing Billie Holiday, you know, at that sort of point of, you know, embryonic discovery.
Will Friedwald wrote the liner notes to the new 10-CD box set, The Complete Columbia Recordings of Mildred Bailey. It's released by the mail order company Mosaic Records. We'll hear more of Bailey's music in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Will Friedwald. He wrote the extensive liner notes for the new 10-CD box set, The Complete Columbia Recordings of Mildred Bailey. It covers the years 1929 to 42. Friedwald is also the author of Sinatra, The Song Is You. I want to take a pause here and play another Mildred Bailey recording. And this is a novelty song that she handles awfully well. It's a song that's very associated with her. It's called Arthur Murray Taught Me Dancing in a Hurry. It's a Johnny Mercer lyric. She recorded it in 1942 with the Red Norvo Orchestra. Would you talk a little bit about this song and where it fits into her body of work?
What's always been fascinating to me about this song is that it was not written for her. It was actually introduced by Jimmy Dorsey's band and Helen O'Connell. And it was just, you know, another, you know, funny Johnny Mercer song. And Mildred Bailey recorded it very early and just took it over. And now it seems like such a perfect marriage of a singer and material. And, you know, it's hard to imagine anyone else doing it. And what's also amazing is that it just shows how funny she was and what a great sort of you know, musical comedian she was, and not, and that she's really, you know, deserves more credit in that area, because not only did she influence, you know, say, you know, Bing Crosby and Billie Holiday and lots of other, you know, great jazz and pop singers, but she's also a major musical comedian and sort of a forerunner to Martha Ray or Betty Hutton and people like that. And it's just a very funny, very, she, you know, Johnny Mercer's lyric is very clever and very witty, and she really, you know, she sings it for all it's worth.
Here she is in 1942.
Life was so peaceful at the laundry. Life was so calm and serene. Life was très gay till that unlucky day I happened to read that magazine. Why did I read that advertisement where it said, since I Roomba, Red thinks I'm sublime? Why, oh, why did I ever try when I didn't have the talent? I didn't have the money, and teacher did not have the time. Ma! Arthur Murray taught me dancing in a hurry. I had a week to spare. He showed me the groundwork, the walking around work, and told me to take it from there. Arthur Murray then advised me not to worry. It'd come out all right. To my way of thinking, it came out stinking. I don't know my left from my right. The people around me can all sing a one and a two and a three. But any resemblance to waltzing is just coincidental with me, 'cause Arthur Murray taught me dancing in a hurry.
That's Mildred Bailey, one of the recordings featured on the new 10-CD box set, The Complete Columbia Recordings of Mildred Bailey. My guest, Will Friedwald, wrote the liner notes. He's also the author of the book Sinatra, The Song Is You. You describe Mildred Bailey as having had self-esteem problems and a weight problem. She was quite heavy. How did that affect her life and her career?
Well, I think eventually, as she got heavier and heavier, she began to get into her 40s. It kind of undermined her self-esteem and made her much more difficult to work with. And that's generally acknowledged to be one of the factors that broke up, the marriage and broke up the great, Norval Bailey band. And, as she got older, and she never got all that old, but, just as it went on, it got more and more severe, and she had more and more of a weight problem, and these things all became kind of a vicious cycle. And she really didn't do that much in the 40s. Sort of after the war, she kind of faded. And then, musical tastes were changing at the same time as well, and she must have seemed, sort of like something from the past by the late 40s. And, that was gradually the end of it for her. She made some nice things in the late 40s, but recorded, this is really the bulk of her career is in this box. And, everything that comes after is there's much less of it. She was much, much less productive and prolific afterwards.
Now, she was broke at the end of her life. How did she end up broke after this very prolific output and after having achieved, considerable popularity?
It just was a case of diminishing returns. After a while, she wasn't, well enough to consistently work, and she hadn't kept up, hadn't kept up the recording career. And, the career gradually diminished. At the end, both Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra, were very gallant in terms of supporting her and, making sure she wasn't, making sure she could keep her farm and things like that, and making sure that her hospital bills were paid. At the end, she really seems to have been, undermined by, it sounds trivial to put it this way, but a serious, lack of self-esteem. And that really seems to have been, the thing that must have psychologically motivated all these, bad health problems and things like that. They all were kind of supporting each other or undermining each other at that point.
Let's close with one of the later recordings included on this new 10 CD box set. And this was a song that I believe was written for her. It's called Don't Take Your Love From Me. Written for her, Will?
Yes. It was written by Henry Nemo, who was a character that was always kind of hanging around Bailey. And it's funny that most people that knew him or were around at that point just describe him as one of the all-time great nut jobs of the era. Apparently, he was always, pulling some wacky stunt after another. Although, people that didn't know him personally and just know the quality of his music, really regard him as kind of one of the great obscure songwriters who came up with all these kind of interesting tunes that, are all fairly substantial. And the sort of the two impressions of Henry Nemo seem very, very much in contrast to each other. But it's a lovely song, and it was obviously written with Bailey in mind. And this early version has a couple of different lyrics than the ones we're used to hearing, when the song kind of became cemented later on. And it's just, an outstanding example of Mildred Bailey singing a ballad at her very best.
Now, Alec Wilder is one of the directors of this session, and he's best known for his book, An American Popular Song. And he also wrote a lot of songs and was very much into art song. And how did Mildred Bailey get hooked up with Alec Wilder?
Mitch Miller told me about that. They were, they were just great fans when they were in college together. They were just great fans of the Bailey Norval band because that, both that band and in Red sort of experimental music, it was sort of like opening a door as to different ways in which pop music and jazz music can go. Not necessarily with exclusively a classical leaning or an attempt to merge jazz with classical, but in an attempt to sort of open sort of the boundaries of what jazz and pop were and perhaps bring in some sort of classical techniques. And this was something that appealed very much to Mitch Miller and Alec Wilder, who were both, classical music students who had a great, very strong love for popular music and jazz. And after they graduated and were doing, professionals, they approached Bailey and Norval about, the idea of doing something together. And it turned out to be something very similar to the octet music that Alec Wilder had been writing at that point. And it was a very interesting, it's another whole aspect of Bailey's career that's worthy of studying, are these really interesting sort of chamber jazz sessions that, she does around 1939, 1940.
I think in this recording, her voice is sounding more weathered than the girlish voice of the earlier sessions.
Well, she certainly sounds older than I like to do things for you, right? yeah, definitely. She was, like 36 or 37 at this point, and, had a lot of heartache and heartbreak behind her already by this point.
Will Friedwald wrote the liner notes to the new 10-CD box set, the complete Columbia recordings of Mildred Bailey. It's released by the mail order company, Mosaic Records. Here's Mildred Bailey, recorded in 1940.
Tear a star from out the sky, and the sky feels blue. Tear a flower from its stem, and the stem weeps too. Take your heart away from mine, and mine will surely break. My life is what you make. So, darling, please keep the spark away. Would you take the wing from birds so that they can't fly? Would you take the ocean's roar and leave but a sigh? All this your heart won't let you do.
This is Fresh Air.